We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm your host, Patricia Karpis. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who have devoted their lives to teaching and helping others through meditation. In today's episode, I interview Tommy Rosen, a beloved yoga teacher, author, addiction recovery expert, and founder of Recovery 2.0. He has spent the last two decades immersed in yoga, recovery, and wellness as he's personally navigated the ups and downs of his own recovery. Tommy has learned firsthand how to move beyond addiction one breath at a time and believes this is possible for anyone. His story begins as a child addicted to sugar and then onto drugs as he shares how our brains get patterned for addiction. He's a pioneer in the field of yoga and recovery and has devoted his life to this work. Before we begin, please take a minute to subscribe to our podcast. And we'd also love your feedback or suggestions for stories. Email me at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. Now, here's Tommy's story. Tommy, it is so great to have you here with me today.
Thank you, Patricia. What a joy.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming in. I want to start with sharing a little bit about your background, because today we're going to talk about addiction and a lot of the things that you've done to help yourself and help other people. And I think it would be great to start with how you came to this practice.
Well, addiction, yoga, recovery, all these things together for me, it's all part of the human condition. I'm taking a very broad perspective on addiction to include any behavior that you do, despite the fact it brings negative consequences into your life. For me, I can go all the way back to my childhood, long before drugs and alcohol ever entered the scene. I can tell you that I was born into a very difficult emotional situation at home, a lot of challenge. And as a child, I was already setting up a rhythm of kind of get high, crash, get high, crash.
What did that look like as a child?
Well, where children can go really first is to food. So for me, it was one sugar event to the next throughout my childhood.
So you get your dopamine hit or your reward, if you will, from sugar when you're a child, but you needed something to numb the situation that you were in your home?
it doesn't necessarily feel like that in terms of numbing. Mm-hmm. It's more like you're just looking for sweetness, or you're looking for comfort.
Comfort.
Or ease, which is a human pursuit. It's a wonderful thing, actually. We all are seeking comfort. We all seek ease. I think the challenge or the problem is we do it in destructive or unsustainable ways. So we know for a fact that consuming large amounts of sugar is not a good thing. It doesn't strengthen the body. It weakens the body. It doesn't build vitality and immunity. It weakens and lessens vitality and immunity. So we're engaging in activities to find comfort, to find ease, that have this strange characteristic of short-term gain. Mm-hmm. You feel a little relief.
Right.
And then long-term loss. You're going to pay a price for this.
You were setting up that rhythm as a child.
Exactly.
And then that really set in when you became older and started becoming addicted to other things.
Drugs.
Drugs.
Sure.
Okay.
Alcohol.
So where did you grow up, actually? Were you...
Grew up in New York City.
New York City, okay.
In the thick of it.
In the thick of it, right, right. Okay, so that really rough childhood, and you start setting up this pattern, and the pattern was with food, but also with the way that you were thinking.
That's right. Just try to think of it like everybody has a rhythm mm-hmm. that they march to. And some people have this sort of up-down rhythm. They have a hard time finding baseline. And by baseline, I mean, how are you when you're just relaxed?
Mm-hmm.
How are you when you're not seeking or chasing after something to feel better?
Mm-hmm.
What if you spent your entire childhood in active addiction without even knowing that's what it was?
I'm so interested in what you're saying, because we've talked a lot about addiction in this podcast, but I've never made the connection between eating as a child and sort of those patterns that you set up almost to trick your brain into that short-term buzz, and then needing that buzz later because you've become so
accustomed
to it.
Well, if you extend it to the child's behavior in other areas of their life where they might be having trouble,
right?
You want to be able to ask yourself, how is my child's self-esteem?
Mm-hmm.
Where is my child getting his or her esteem from?
Right.
I'd get home from school on a Friday evening, be very amped up, and I'd say, you know, I really want to get my homework for the weekend done. And I'm committed to getting it done, but I'm so distracted.
Mm.
And I can't sit still. So everything was a movement to something else. If somebody called me on the phone, even if I was about to work on my homework, I'd go with them to go to the movies or whatever it was. So Sunday night would come. None of the homework would be finished. I'd go to school the next day, stressed out. I'm behind everybody else. And I'd spend the rest of the week trying to catch up and wondering, what's wrong with me?
Yeah, feeling horrible about yourself.
Horrible.
Yeah, you were struggling inside mm-hmm. and had no way to express or articulate that other than these
erratic
behaviors.
That's right. So it's just a perfect setup. It's a perfect setup for addiction. This is why I don't feel any shame about the behaviors that would ensue later on. I understand that I'm responsible for my behaviors, but I understand and have compassion for myself. I know where I came from.
So then when did you shift into drugs and alcohol?
Well, alcohol, I had an experience with alcohol when I was 13 years old. It might appear to the outside like, wow, this is a person who was really trying to hurt themselves. I just drank so much alcohol so quickly without really knowing what was going to happen or what it was. And I got unbelievably violently sick. As a result, alcohol, though it was always present in my story, it was never my first love, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Later on that year, when I was 13, I'd find marijuana for the first time. And that's where my sense of, wow, I have found something that actually works for me.
And when you say works for you, how did it make you feel?
I was so relaxed. My anxiousness was gone. My hyperactivity calmed. And we know that medically, marijuana calms the hyperactive mind.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nothing more than me self-medicating with some other bonuses. The bonuses were marijuana, it brought great levity, humor. I connected with other people who smoked pot at a deeper level than I could connect normally with people. I started to be able to have conversations with girls. All of this associated with smoking marijuana.
Interesting.
So you can see how powerful that would be for somebody who had had my upbringing. You find this thing that you can essentially smoke anytime you want.
And feel so much better.
Why wouldn't you do it? Now, here's the weird thing about drug addiction. Here's the weird thing about smoking marijuana. Let's put it that way. There are benefits to it at first.
Always short-term benefits.
Short-term benefits. You're going to pay prices as well. Mm-hmm. The thing about marijuana is you don't understand the price up front you're going to pay until it's too late. And that's what happened to me. See, marijuana dims the human spirit. Over time, it prevents a person from being effective, from being able to complete tasks, from being able to motivate themselves. One becomes dependent upon it for your mood control.
Mm-hmm.
You're not able to deal with the emotions that life is going to throw at you. You must always return to this substance to treat your emotional situation. It's just no way to go through life.
Right.
It would not ultimately be a solution to the quandary that of my life. What I was seeking and what I was, you know, always what I had been looking for. I had found it there temporarily in marijuana.
And then what was your next temporary? So you go from sugar to marijuana, and so you're kind of going up the addiction chain at this point.
I liked exploration. So psychedelic drug use made perfect sense for somebody like me. And I would have these, you know, mind expansive experiences on these psychedelic drugs. I can't tell you it was all negative. Some of it was very beautiful. Again, unsustainable, short term, right? So you've got something that's serving your need at that moment, but you're becoming literally dependent upon it for your joy.
Right.
Dependent upon it for your experience of life. And you cannot base your experience of life on something outside of your own spirit. Psychedelics were just another place to go to explore. Remember, I'm on, like all human beings, I'm simply seeking. I'm on a path of trying to understand myself and my place in the world. Unfortunately, I feel like this progression of just simply looking outside of yourself and basing your life upon an external thing, namely any substance, led to greater and greater disconnection with myself, greater and greater disconnection with my family. And ultimately, I found myself one evening being offered cocaine and taking the person up on that offer. When I had always, previous to that, I had preached against the use of heavier drugs. I was never going to be that guy.
How old were you when you first started doing the cocaine?
Cocaine came later in my college years, like around 19 or 20.
Okay. So this drug, you have a drug theme since mm-hmm. you're 13. And,
right.
And ramping up.
Right. And so by the time I was about 19 or 20, I guess there was what I would call very dark areas of drug exploration. Mm-hmm. Very, very dark. Cocaine and heroin came into my life.
Mm. Cocaine and heroin.
Right.
Wow.
And that at that point, you're now out of the realm of just trying to experiment or explore. Now you're really in the realm of killing pain.
And is the addiction becoming just stronger and stronger for you?
Yes. You're at the level of the body, what you're now dealing with is drugs that have a profound effect upon and control over the central nervous system. You're dealing with huge, explosive bursts of dopamine
mm-hmm.
in the system. Your reward pathways in the brain are lighting up. You're feeling a false sense of power. A false sense of belonging, a false sense of like, it's all good. And so now you're really getting further away from the truth.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping, available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
You working at this time? Could you go to work the next day or go to school? What were you doing? Because I've heard from addicts that they just sometimes they go into their office and no one ever knows.
At the beginning, it's not as if you're doing cocaine every day. It's not as if you're doing heroin every day. It's just here and there. You still are trying to manage your life. You have responsibilities. You're in school. You have relationships. You have commitments. And you're probably flailing at most of that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But you're still trying.
Yeah.
You're still sort of like, you know, you're certainly not getting straight A's and the situation is great and your relationships are great and, you know, you're athletically, you're like out there like doing it and you're struggling. But you don't see it that way. Because this still, you're still perceiving this partying as fun. And then one day you recognize, it really does come into your consciousness, I really can't stop this.
Mm.
All the things that are dear to you start to become less dear to you. They start to take a back seat. And the drugs start to take a front seat. Because now you're no longer experimenting. You're no longer exploring. This is not an adventure. Now you actually need this. In your mind, you're feeling worse and worse about yourself. But it's very important you understand. In a way, this is no different than the rhythm I set up as a 3-year-old child. I've built this pattern into my body. I've built this pattern into my mind. I am an addict.
You're in trouble.
Yeah.
So what was your wake-up call or what happened that then triggered, because I want to talk about the recovery process that can help so many people.
I called my father. I'm struggling with drugs. I tell him the truth.
Okay.
I'm struggling with cocaine. I told him. He said, come and live with me. He was living in Los Angeles. I was in Boulder at school at CU. I went and lived with him for 3 months. And during that 3-month period of time, this was the regimen. Eat 3 meals a day. Train with a trainer at the gym 5 days a week. Go to a therapist 3 days a week. And that was my deal.
No rehab or anything like that.
No rehab, no treatment, no program to directly address addiction other than the therapy. And after 3 months, my body was stronger than I could remember it ever being. I felt good in my mind. I had no intention of stopping smoking pot. None. I just knew that marijuana was going to be a part of my life for the rest of my life. But the cocaine and the heroin, I knew that had to go. The alcohol, I knew that had to go. Mm-hmm. Those were the bad drugs. And every now and then I'd probably take psychedelics and that would be fine. After 3 months, I went to my dad and my therapist and I said, I want to go back to Boulder. And they said, don't go. Please don't go. You don't understand. And I knew they were wrong. I'm going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to live with a friend of mine who also wants to be sober. Who wants to be sober. Mm-hmm. See, that was the key.
Who is going to be sober.
Right.
No, wants to be sober.
Right. And I went. I went back to Boulder and I got a home with this guy. And the deal was he and his wife and his little son were going to live upstairs in this home. And I was going to live downstairs. And we were going to support each other and be sober. I was now more or less 3 months sober. And I went to school to enroll in the summer school program. And when I came home, I walked into the kitchen and my friend was smoking cocaine over the stove.
Aww.
And I saw that scene and I smelled that smell.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, it was as if that part of my mind was just removed. It was a deep mental fog.
Yeah, your brain went straight to, I want that reward.
Absolutely. And I went after it. Almost 4 months later, I was at my bottom. And my bottom was the moment when I was finally ready to tell the truth. I called my dad and I told him, I'm in trouble. And he said, this time you're going to have to go to treatment. And I said, no, I'm not going to go. I will not go. And he started to cry. And it just utterly destroyed me. And for a moment, I just had that glimpse of how my behavior had affected him and the rest of my family, and how alone I felt and so disconnected from everything that had ever been a hope and a dream of mine. It was all lost.
Right, right.
I had nowhere to turn. And I said to my dad, please stop crying. I will go. I will get help. And it turned out to be the turning point in my life.
And then what led you to create the program that you now have, Recovery 2.0? Did you have any relapses between your 20s and now, if you will?
I'll make a long story short.
Okay.
So I got a lot out of rehab treatment. I mean, it changed my life. I stayed sober for a year. I relapsed for a year. I came to my second bottom. The first bottom was a bottom of desperation. It's a great bottom to get sober off of, but it's not necessarily the best bottom to stay sober. Because when the desperation goes away, you start thinking, maybe I could get back to that place where it used to be fun, where I smoked pot and everything was cool, and it wasn't a problem for me, and it didn't bring catastrophe into my life. That's the thinking that leads you to relapse. When you get sick of that, you come to that second bottom, and the second bottom is a bottom of self-realization. See, now you realize, I truly cannot go on like I'm going on. And I need to find a different way to live, although I don't know what it is. It's not because someone in treatment is telling you to do it. It's not because your parent is telling you to do it. It's because in your heart of hearts, you know now you have this thing. You have got to move beyond it.
That's the loudest voice. Not I'm desperate, but I want to be a better person.
I want this.
I want this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And was that the big shift? No more relapses or?
No more relapses.
So you're one of the lucky ones, if you will.
There have been bottoms.
Yeah.
In recovery.
Right, right.
Just didn't include drugs and alcohol. The reason that I do the work that I do in the world is to show the entire continuum of addiction into recovery, into advanced recovery. Yeah. Recovery 2.0 is just simply about thriving on a path of recovery, moving beyond not just your primary addictions, but all the addictions.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because in our podcast, we talk often about mindfulness and meditation and, you know, sort of how we become more able to self-regulate. And I'm most curious about all of the tools, including meditation, that one sort of takes on in their toolbox in order to really create a strong recovery plan.
So recovery happens in stages. That first bottom of desperation that we spoke of, let's just call that, I'm at stage zero. I don't know anything about addiction, really, only that I've lived it. I don't know how to get better from it. I don't even know if there is a way to get better from it. And I don't even know that I would call it addiction, even at that point. I just know that I'm stuck.
And a lot of people talk about addiction as being chemical. So does that make some people feel like there's nothing they can do about it? This seems like a big misnomer to me.
Yeah, I think I want to come right out and say for anybody listening, there's a way through all addiction, and there's a way to move beyond it and to live an extraordinary life. No matter how far down you think you've gone, there's a way through it. That's the basis of my work.
Right.
So that stage zero recovery, that place of desperation you come to, you know you need something different, but you don't know what it's going to be. Often it's the 12 steps and 12-step society that you enter. That's probably the most successful and most popular of the approaches that we see in our society today. That was my approach. When I finally got sober for the last time, I embraced the 12 steps. I worked with a sponsor and I went through the work that's requested in those steps. I went 1 through 12, and as is promised, my life changed. My thinking changed. And it was a wonderful, amazing thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it doesn't stop there. And I think that's where some people get stuck. The reason that I struggled with drugs and alcohol so badly was not because drugs and alcohol are the problem. It's because I had other problems. When you take the drugs and alcohol away, those other problems come to the surface. But it may take a couple years before they come to the surface.
Well, is this where you talk about the four aggravations?
The four aggravations are there for most of us. Mm-hmm. Negative thinking, self-doubt, procrastination, resentment. But we all seem to have this thing called codependency. It's the disease of the lost self. And it comes out in relationship to others. So for me, obviously my relationship with my family and family members had been very strained and difficult in my childhood. My first romantic relationships, my relationships there, so fraught with fear, pain, challenge, confusion, as so many people face.
So does Recovery 2.0 create this grouping of exercises, practices that are in sync with a 12-step program? Or give me some specifics about how that works.
Recovery 2.0 embraces all paths to recovery. 12 steps, smart recovery, Buddhist approaches, physical approaches, mental approaches, spiritual approaches. We embrace anything that works for a human being. What our main principle is simply this. As you recover from addiction, life's going to happen. And you need to know it. You need to understand this thing called codependency because it's coming. And if you don't know that it's coming and you don't know what it is, it'll just sideswipe you. You're 3 or 5 or 7 years sober. And the next thing you know, you're thinking about using drugs and alcohol again. But you don't understand why.
Right.
So we address all of life. We look at our relationships. We look at our relationship with food. That's very important in Recovery 2.0. We engage in the practices of yoga and meditation. That is, to me, it is not a give or take. It is a requisite for an extraordinary life on the path of recovery.
And why is that? Why do yoga and meditation help us on that path?
Yoga and meditation provide the things that we've actually been looking for. It brings you to a sense of ease, sustainable, strengthens the body, builds vitality, builds immunity. Addiction is a sense of lack. With yoga, you learn how to breathe properly. You deal with the most important need in the human body, the breath. All of a sudden, you're feeling at a deep psychological level, you're filling yourself up. You're feeling a sense of wholeness. You're feeling stronger. You're detoxifying yourself. Yoga is the perfect, absolute, amazing complement to the 12 steps or any other functional path to recovery. The problem is with addiction, that you experience it at the level of mind. Craving comes in mentally. There's a physical component as well, of course, but you're thinking about your drug of choice, or you're thinking about the anxiety that you feel, and you're creating this unbelievably stressful, anxious reality for yourself, and who wouldn't want a way out? So you practice yoga and meditation. It calms the mind. It strengthens and detoxifies the body. If you're on a path of recovery, it's what you've been looking for. It is the practice of recovery.
It is the practice of recovery, right?
Someone asked me the other day, Tommy, actually, how does change happen? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And no one had actually ever asked me that question before. Like, that's a profound question. Okay, how do we actually change? You know, and I'm not being coy when I say this. We change through changing. You must take a different action. You must repeat that different action. You must build it into a habit. And then you'll look back after a period of days and you'll realize, I have now changed.
But you have to start and you have to do the practice.
Absolutely.
And what advice do you give for people that are struggling with this other than, you know, buying your book and coming to practice with your all of the people that you've trained? Where do you start to begin to change?
Right. Well, if you do buy Recovery 2.0, mm-hmm. it'll lay it out for you in pretty clear language.
Right, right.
So the first thing is this idea of being alone, that has to be dashed. One doesn't recover from addiction alone. Nobody, ever. You have to come into community. That means you're going to have to tell the truth to somebody, and you're going to have support and make yourself vulnerable. It's where it started for me. It's where it starts for everybody. You tell somebody, I'm in trouble. I can't stop this thing and it's killing me, or I can't stop this thing and I don't want to live like this any longer. So what can I do? And people will help you and direct you to good resources, to treatment, to 12-step programs, mm-hmm. to therapy. These are the ways that we begin to get out of the terrible isolation. See, addiction takes place in isolation. That's the whole thing. You can be in a room full of people, but you're still stuck up in your head thinking you're stuck alone. So community is important. Therapeutic processes are important. 12 steps, to me, you know, very important. Whatever your path is, it doesn't matter. As long as it brings you into community and brings you into clear communication with your own heart.
Mm-hmm.
See, in the worst of addiction, you can't even tell the truth to yourself.
The work that you're doing is so amazing, and it comes out of your own survival story and your own practice. And I think just people hearing your story and just all of your experiences is so helpful. And this is such a gift that you've given to so many people.
That's my prayer.
It's such a heartbreaking
yes.
situation.
For all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Heartbreaking, yeah. So thank you so much for
You're so welcome.
The gifts that you bring to so many people.
Thank you, Patricia.
Thanks so much to Tommy, and thank you all for listening. We look forward to sharing more inspiring stories next week. For more on Tommy, check out TommyRosen.com. Once again, if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio App in the App Store. See you next week.